This is Payments Ground Game, where we go under the operational hood of payments ISOs. Let's take a deep dive into the tactics you can use to strategically scale performance and your bottom line. Hi, I'm Elena Smith. I'm here with Kevin Smith, and we're here for another episode of Payments Ground Game. It's been a little bit. I'm sorry. We've been kind of busy with projects here at Secure Bank Card, but we're back. And we're ready to tackle a kind of complicated topic that has a lot of tentacles to it. We're going to talk about processing. We're going to break down today the front end and back end, authorization and clearing part of processing, and get into some of the background into maybe some of the things that you run into on an everyday basis or just every now and then, and you kind of wonder why that might happen. When you really understand the ins and outs of processing, it might make more sense to you. So we're going to go into that and talk about that. It's also important if you are looking to possibly, you know, have your own direct processing deal, you really want to have an understanding of what the front end and back end are actually doing. And today we're just going to go into the nuts and bolts of what makes up the front end and the back end and why they're important and each part of that process is important. But you want to know those things going into a relationship if you want to, have your own direct relationship, and we'll cover that in a different episode. So let's get started and just start with the front end. And I'll let you start with this, Kevin. Can you just give us an overview of how a front end authorization processor works? Just give us the 4-year-old version of how it all works.
Absolutely. So the 4-year-old version of what is a front end, I guess we have to go back to when we were all children and we think about a telephone. When you pick up a telephone and you called somebody, usually that phone was connected to the wall, it had a line coming out of the back of it that was connected to the wall, and then it went into the mysterious world of Ma Bell, and Ma Bell connected you with another cord that was plugged into the wall that connected into the back of somebody else's telephone. Ma Bell, that connection piece between the two telephones, is kind of like your front end. You know, a front end is literally there to have telephones hanging off the front of it. And if you want to think about it this way, think about, you know, they're not telephones, they're terminals. Okay. So we used to do terminals, had telephone lines in the back of them. Now they connect generally, for the most part, either wirelessly, or they connect to your internet service provider and then connect to the front end. But that's really what a front end is the front end is the first piece that terminal is communicating with to either authorize or decline, not really do anything else other than just authorize or decline. Is that card good or is that card not good? That's kind of what your front end does.
And when we're talking about terminals, we're also talking about things like virtual terminals. It doesn't have to be a piece of hardware. It could be a virtual terminal. It could be a gateway. All of the things that basically provide an authorization are what we're covering on the front end.
So when we talk about that, there are two different basic types of authorizations. Elena, there is credit and then there is PIN debit. And why are they different, Elena? Why are those two different? Well, I'll explain. The difference between the two is PIN debit is a single message transaction. Credit is a dual message transaction. So when we run a credit card transaction on a front end, literally they swipe the card, read the card, key the card in, put in the amount. That information goes over to the front end. The front end contacts the issuing bank and says, I have this card number and I have this amount. Is that any good? And the issuer is going to respond back to the front end and say, yes, it's good. No, it's not. And then the front end is going to communicate that transactional information of authorization with an authorization code or a decline back to the terminal. A PIN debit transaction is a little bit different when it goes to a front end. A PIN debit transaction, when you run a PIN debit transaction, it is immediately going out to the front end. From the front end, it is going out to the bank, so to speak, okay, the issuer, and it's going to say, is this amount good? If it's good, give me the money. And that money is going to move. There is no clearing and settlement associated basically with that debit, PIN debit transaction. That money is going to move immediately. And it's going to come back as a message that says it's either good or it's bad.
And if we think about that different experience as a cardholder, if you have a card, you're using a credit card and you only have an authorization, you're going to see it as pending versus a PIN debit transaction. If you're using that as a cardholder, that's going to immediately withdraw from your account. So the credit authorization, just as like a placeholder on your credit limit, it kind of takes that credit and holds a place for it, but it doesn't, there's no financial impact to that yet. Versus a PIN debit transaction, that is immediately a reduction in your account, if that makes sense.
That is absolutely correct. That's why when we walk out of the store and I bought something at Best Buy, I get a message from American Express that says, you've just authorized a purchase at Best Buy for $215. Whereas if I use my debit card, Navy Federal is going to come in and say, as I walk out the store, $215 has been taken from your checking account.
Okay, let's talk about product certification to the front end, because for a product, we were talking about terminals, virtual terminals, gateways. For those to work on a front end, they have to be certified to that front end. Let's talk a little bit about that and what's required in that process.
Yeah, and that's, you know, generally everybody says, well, I'm using such and such and such gateway. Is that going to work? Well, the reason they ask that question is because that such and such whiz-bang 3000 gateway, if it's only certified to a specific front end, you can only pass transactions to that front end that it's certified with. Most products today that are the mainstream big products today are certified on multiple front ends, i.e. authorized.net, i.e. NMI, i.e. FluidPay, i.e. a Valor terminal or a PAX terminal. They're going to be certified to the major front-end networks and can be used at different front ends. Now, there are still products out there today that are not certified to multiple front ends, and that could be because the person that's developed that product has a relationship with that particular front end, and they've done some sort of financial deal where they kept that as exclusive to that front end. Or it could be because the person that owns that front end wants to make sure if somebody uses that product, they have to come to their front end. A great example of that is the First Data
Fiserv Clover
device. Clover product.
Yes.
It's only certified to the Fiserv First Data front end. Global, on the other hand, with TSYS, TSYS is kind of a front end that is really not, doesn't have really that many exclusives or exclusive products to it, unlike we just talked about with First Data.
But I think what TSYS is known for is the fact that there are a variety of products that are certified to their front end. I think they have the most breadth of product on their front end, if you agree with that.
No, I absolutely agree. That's why we did our deal with TSYS. That's why we chose TSYS as our front end of choice. It's just the breadth of product that they have. I believe they are the most generic breadth of product provider out there today. Now, because we did that, we don't have access to Clover. We don't do Clover because we don't do business with First Data today. But, that's a good example of what is certified and the difference between being certified on multiple platforms and a single platform.
And when you're choosing your authorization provider, you want to make sure that they have the products that you are intending to sell. Because
absolutely,
they don't have that product, or they're not going to be certified to that product, it's kind of a moot point and you don't want to go down that road.
Exactly. And so if it is not certified to them, getting a terminal provider to certify a product to a new front end is not just to pick up a phone and say, hey, Valor, why won't you certify over here? That's a big undertaking for those guys. Generally, that process of certifying that product to that front end is a generally at best, I would say probably a 4 to 6 month project. At worst, it's probably 6 months to 18 months to go through that, because the manufacturer has to go through a set of procedures and go through a set of tests, et cetera, to get that front-end provider to sign off that that product is certified. And then on top of that, they need to go through additional steps if they want that product to be what we call Class A certified or Class B certified. The difference between a Class A certified product and a Class B certified product is a Class A certified product generally will have the provider, the front-end provider, will provide technical support through their help desk for that product. A Class B product says, yes, you can run transactions through this front-end, but don't call us. We're not going to help you. The front-end provider's help desk generally will not provide any support.
And I know a part of that certification process, we're not product people per se, so we don't know the intricacies of product certification, but enough to know that a lot of it has to do with the way that you're sending authorization data. So as the product, you're collecting that data, the way the card is collected, or the way the card is accepted, rather, and everything about the transaction and the way that we accepted it, the transactional data, EMV data, et cetera. There's a lot of ins and outs that you have to follow in terms of how you collect and transmit that information. And so that's all part of the certification process that you have to follow. And that's why it gets so lengthy and complicated, I think.
That's also why we're not product people. No, there's people that do that very, very well, and that's not us. We don't do that very, very well. We don't claim to do that.
Yeah, I think because it's not just like you build it and you're done. It's one of these things where as the card brands make changes in the data that they're requiring that is transmitted, and the processors as well, you're having to keep up with every one of those changes. So it's not set it and forget it by any stretch. It is a continuous, you have to keep on, you know, making updates and changes to your product once you get certified.
Wow, that sounds a lot like being a software company.
Yes, unfortunately, it's that way. Nothing's easy. We know that.
Nothing is easy, and everything is a continuous change, and nothing is ever done. That's just the way it works. As our industry continues to change and continues to evolve, there will continue to be these changes. And whether you're a software provider, whether you're a gateway, whether you're a terminal provider, whether you're a front-end provider, you're continually going through these modifications and changes and updates. That's just part of the painful process. Let's talk about reliability. You know, when we talk about front-ends and, you know, hey, I'm going to admit I'm guilty of this. Sometimes I laugh at the front-ends that we don't do business with when we see the panic on Facebook or whatever through the Slayers groups or whatever, because so-and-so's front end is down and none of the terminals on that work and yada, 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 yada. Here's the reality. The reality is they all go down. Which one are you going to choose? You're going to choose the one that goes down least frequently with the products that you use. And yes, they can go down product specific. So it could be that a particular terminal on a particular front end goes down. It's not that front end in particular that went down, but it's that product that went down on that front end, especially with today's integrated gateway / virtual terminal products. So I would love to tell you, hey, this is the one to go with because they never go down. That's a lie. They all go down. They all go down. They don't go down as frequently as they used to, but they all go down.
And it usually seems like they go out down at the most inopportune times, you know, like New Year's Eve. You've got every club and liquor store calling or something along those lines, or in the middle of a huge event, you know, a sports event or something. But I will say, as far as the authorization provider, the processor going down itself, I think that is fairly rare. I can't remember the last time that there was a significant front end outage.
Well, that's correct because of your short term memory loss issue.
Okay.
They do go down. They go down. You know, hey, look, they go down. I wouldn't say they go down more than a couple of times a year, but they go down a couple of times a year. I mean, I can remember, you know, it was just, what was that? Probably about 4 or 5 months ago, we had one of those issues. You can't remember the last time you saw the unnamed provider of the terminal of choice for most door knockers go down. I think it was only a couple of
products. Yeah, products, I know, go down more often than the processors themselves.
But as we all, you know, our perception is reality, and perception for most folks out there that are listening to this, if their terminal doesn't work, the front end provider went down. That is just reality.
True.
You know, I don't know how much more we want to get into the front end before we want to start talking about the back end, but there are certain things that people do not take into consideration. And I know this will be a whole nother podcast for us, Elena, but when we talk about dues and assessments and interchange and what are the differences between those, there are certain assessments that are applied to transaction authorizations. There are certain dues that are applied to certain activity within a transaction that happens at the authorization that is not associated with interchange. So understand, you know, there are these fees and stuff, and you wonder, you know, where does this come from? Like a good example of that is, you know, the excessive decline fees associated with the card associations, or what they call misuse of authorization fees. Those are fees associated with the use of a front end, and specifically a front end.
Okay. Are we ready to hop over to the back end now?
Let's hop over to the back end.
Okay. Let's start with that overview again. Very simplistic, if you can break it down for us and just explain how the back end works for us.
So here's how back end works, guys. The back end is literally after a transaction is authorized and a merchant has pushed that transaction, it goes from authorization to the next step is called clearing. What is clearing? Clearing is taking the transaction from an state of an authorization, sending it to the card associations so that they literally send the bill to the issuing bank, and the issuing bank pays the bill back to the merchant. So that's the easiest way to think of it. Think of it as, when the day is done, I am now taking this invoice for this transaction. I have given it to Visa. Visa gives that invoice to the issuing bank. The issuing bank says, here's your $100 for the invoice. Visa then turns around and takes that $100 and passes it back to the merchant for funding. That is clearing kind of in a nutshell. Now, we're going to get into the details of it, which are a lot more in depth, i.e. clearing. What does that mean? What is it, you know? How does a transaction qualify, requalify, reclass, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that is the basics of clearing.
Okay. Before we get to that point, let's talk about, because I think you kind of didn't mention this, that the way it gets from the authorization to a actual captured and cleared transaction is that we close the batch.
We close the batch, and there are, and I think we kind of need to step back for a second and maybe define, there are two basic types of backends. There is terminal-based, and there is host-based, okay? Now, in a terminal-based environment, the transaction literally is in the terminal until you batch out the terminal. You do something, push a button, press a button, click on something, tell it to close out. But until you do that, those transactions do not batch and they do not go to clearing. In a host-based environment, those transactions are literally hosted by the back end. And what happens is they can automatically pick those transactions up and move them to clearing without you doing anything. You can auto-close, so to speak. That was the true term, and the first iteration of auto-close was in a host-based back-end environment. So what that means is, if I'm in a terminal-based environment and I am not closing my batch because I need to edit the transactions, because I need to put tips in, or I need to do something, or I want to make sure that when I close my batch, I have control over when I close that batch, because then those group of transactions stay together and I'm not breaking a day up into multiple groups of transactions. Until you close that batch, nothing goes to clearing.
Okay, but we have an exception to that. We mentioned it earlier, and that is PIN debit, because it's a single message transaction.
Here you go into the murky waters of PIN debit. The merchant is still not going to get paid, even if they don't close out their terminal.
Correct.
Who's going to get paid? The back-end provider is going to get paid for that transaction, and they are going to hold on to it until that merchant closes their batch, if they have appropriate reconciliation capability. If they do not, that's where you see a lot of merchants get into trouble, because they have these PIN-based transactions they do not close out their terminal for a period of time. And what happens is the back end or the clearing provider reverses the PIN debit item on the merchant's behalf because he's gone over a period of time that he's not closed his batch. Therefore, they never got the actual transaction to come across to match up with what they got in their single message funding. They reverse out the transaction. So when the merchant closes his batch, that PIN debit transaction falls to the floor. And then the poor little merchant is all upset because he didn't get paid for his $20 EBT transaction, which the only way he can get paid for it is to rerun it. But guess what, Elena? You can't rerun that transaction unless that cardholder comes back in there with that card and their PIN, and it becomes a mess. That's why we built all the reconciliation pieces within our products at Pioneer, so that if the merchant doesn't close his batch, we still have the reconciliation piece that can find those transactions and still make sure the merchant gets paid for them without having to go and hunt down little Billy and make little Billy come back in with his EBT card or his Pulse card or his Nice card and rerun that item.
Always little Billy. Poor little Billy.
Always little Billy. Little Billy gets the shit beat out of him.
All right, let's move on. Okay, so we talked about the batch outs, the settlement with the card networks. Let's touch on cut times a little bit. We didn't cover that.
Well, once again, we're focusing back in this terminal-based environment. And generally on a back end, back ends are processing and clearing items in groups. And generally, those groups are accumulated over a period of time. So, for example, at TSYS, they have cut times, the 2000 cut time, the 2300 cut time, the 1800 cut time. Those cut times are all in military time, and they're all spoken about in Pacific Standard Time. So what happens is TSYS takes all of the transactions they have at 1800 Pacific, which for those of you that are not military time folks, that's 6 o'clock Pacific, that have not cleared yet. They gather them all up and then they shoot them off to Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover. Then again at 2000, which is 8 o'clock Pacific, they gather up all the items that are between the last batch process or cut time and now gather them all up and process them out. So understand, in doing this, transactions have to get to the card associations to clear by certain times. If they don't clear, what happens is they wait until the next day for clearing. So if you have merchants that call up and scream and holler and say, because they ran their transaction yesterday and they don't see that money in their account today, it's because they either A, did not batch their terminal, or B, if they did batch their terminal, they may have batched it out after the last cut time to qualify for clearing for that particular day. And that is one of the biggest things that we still run into today with merchants and the confusion associated with that. A, it's in Pacific time. B, when did they close their batch? They close their batch 2 minutes too late. They don't understand. Not only do you need to close it probably 15 minutes earlier before that cut time, but no, there is no grace period after that cut time.
And then what happens when you have an authorization on one day and your capture or cleared transaction is happening on the next day? Then you start to get downgrades. And you pay higher interchange rates. So that's a real issue.
True. Very much so. And especially if you don't close your batch for multiple days. And believe it or not, folks, there are people out there that still do not close their batch, but once a week, that's the way they've always done it. They don't care that they're paying more for it. That's the way they do it. That's how they reconcile. That's the way they run their business.
I think the more frequent example is probably a restaurant that wants to manually close because they want to get those tips in before they close their batch. And they usually close fairly late because their close time is already really late. And then they need the extra time to enter the tips. And that's a real problem. But it can be solved. It could be solved with pay at the table or something like that. But it's just still is not as common as I think it should be, which is interesting.
Very much agreed. And even you then also get into your back end tries to submit these items to clearing with what they deem to be the most appropriate interchange rate for that particular transaction. And the card associations could still take that transaction and say, nope, it really doesn't qualify at that interchange rate. It actually qualifies at this interchange rate. And that's what's called a reclassification of a transaction. And that happens every day.
Yeah, we get quite a few reclassifications. That's a good segue, I think, into rejected transactions as well, because just because we batch out doesn't mean that every single one of those transactions is going to be accepted. Talk to me about rejected transactions and some reasons why that might happen.
I can tell you the number one reason why that happens, and it's because of stale authorization date. And the card associations are getting stricter and stricter and stricter on that. So, for example, if your transactions are over 5 days old, you know, or over 10 days old in some cases, and you close your batch, but you haven't closed your batch for like 2 weeks, guess what? MasterCard's going to kick all those to the curb. The back end's still going to submit them to MasterCard, but MasterCard's going to get in and go, are you kidding me? This transaction is more than 5 days old. Balk. And they're going to kick it to the curb, and they call it rejecting. And basically that transaction is going to come back out. It's going to reject. The merchant's got to go rerun it. It's the only way to really fix it, especially with stale authorizations.
Okay, so we're kind of on the topic of accuracy and how important that is with a back-end processor. So one of those things is, you know, how do we not have transactions that reject? We talked a little bit about interchange reclassifications and why that might happen. What about interchange qualifications? What do we need to be concerned about with a back-end processor in the way we qualify an interchange?
Well, you know, it's really funny. Some of the easiest things to do are some of the, you know, are the basic things that need to be done to qualify. So in a key entered environment, ABS. You need to be doing ABS. You need to be trying to do ABS. If you don't, that's going to fall down into a non-qualified transaction. You know, if your authorization is over and you don't close within 24 hours, it's going to fall out and it's going to fall to a higher interchange. And, oh, Kevin, it's not going to be that much more. Well, yeah, it can be like 50, 60 basis points more in interchange. That's a huge difference, especially if your merchant is doing large B2B transactions or, you know, something along those lines. At 60 basis points can be a lot. You know, if you're doing B2B transactions and you're trying to settle level three, you better be passing over tax information. If you're not, it's not going to qualify. And it's going to fall into a bucket that you don't want. All of a sudden, it's going to fall into a, you know, a business non-qualified transaction rate that's like 3.15 and 10 cents an item. It's crazy.
And the fun part is when things don't qualify the way that you hope they did, trying to research why. And sometimes that lives at the gateway. Sometimes there's another reason for that. It really takes some digging to figure out why exactly it happens. And there's a lot of complexity involved in that research.
It requires an enormous amount of eyeball time on spreadsheets.
Our favorite thing to do.
That's only fun if you're drinking a lot of bourbon. But then if you're drinking a lot of bourbon and doing those spreadsheets, what generally tends to happen is we have mistakes.
Speaking of mistakes, let's talk about another concern around accuracy with our back-end processor, and that is with erroneous submissions. Unfortunately, this is something that we've experienced from a processor.
And
it's no fun to deal with. It gets very messy. I can think of some specific examples in that files were submitted twice. So then when you submit, you submit the same thing twice, all of the second, you know, the second time you submit it, the card brands say, wait a second, I've already had this. I've seen this before. I'm rejecting it. So then you get a ton of rejects. And not only do they come back to you and you've got a mess to deal with, but they also charge you for not only the inconvenience of the reject, but then for them to report on all those rejects. So it's just like the hits keep on coming when these kind of problems arise. Can you think of any other, I know we've had some other ones as well, some reasons why we had erroneous submissions, but I don't know if any come off the top of your head. It's been a long time for that.
It's been a while since we've had those. We generally get those, believe it or not, in April and October. due to, you know, things not being implemented correctly when we have the biannual interchange updates, et cetera. You'll get some of that kind of stuff. And that's generally where it comes from. Although we have had it, you know, I would say our most prolific thing we've had in the past is just the double submission stuff, where somebody actually pressed the button twice instead of once.
And with these things, you're just at the mercy of the processor. I mean, you're trusting that they're going to do what they need to do. But when that happens, we don't have much control over it. All we can do is just try to clean it up. And keep in mind, too, when they, you know, if they do try to submit something twice and it does post, it's posting to that cardholder twice. So we've had it where they've actually successfully posted and cleared things twice in duplicate. And then they have to go and submit a reversal to undo all of that. So then you get a flurry of customer service phone calls because cardholders are seeing transactions twice and you have to, you know, help them find that reversal where it came off. So that gets very messy too. So the bottom line is when you are selecting a processor, especially on the back end, accuracy, I think, is the most important thing that you want to dig into and just be sure that they have a process in place to have timely and accurate submissions, and then also stay current with the updates that happen every spring and fall, as well as, you know, any interchange updates. Those are usually in the spring and the fall assessment updates, etc. You just want that processor on top of their game as far as, you know, a well-oiled machine as far as handling all of these updates.
And let me assure you folks, they are all well-oiled machines. All of them. All of them. I think one of the most frustrating things is not so much, hey, look, we all make mistakes. What's the best thing you can do when you make a mistake? A, admit you made a mistake. B, take care of it. Make sure that if you choose a processor, make sure that your processor has a history of owning their mistakes. And if they do have a mistake, doing what needs to be done to rectify the mistake. I've seen some bad situations out there where the ISO got into the fight with the processor and the processors basically just said, piss off. And the ISO got stuck with it. So make sure you're doing business with folks that, you know, hey, we all make mistakes. Let's just make sure that we, you know, clean it up and clean it up right. So I would say today, Elena, we've covered a boatload of stuff.
You know, this is a lot of information. This is a lot of information.
We still haven't got into dues assessments. We haven't got into interchange. What is the different interchange categories? We haven't got into, you know, any of that stuff yet. We haven't even got into when is it time to get at your own front end deal and your own back end deal. We haven't got into any of that kind of stuff. That's all going to come out, I think, in another podcast. But today was just kind of the overview, scratch the surface. What's the front end? What's the back end?
And I think we definitely did that. So thank you very much. This has been fun to get through the details with you. And we will be back to cover all of those topics that Kevin just mentioned.